You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
And recruit gospel workers. It's interesting, isn't it? At the end of Romans, Paul gives this long list of gospel workers. Phoebe, Prisca and Aquila, Aristobulus, Rufus' mother, Stephanus, all these guys. And Paul's aim is to recruit gospel workers. And getting clear on the gospel will enable us to develop gospel partnerships. But Paul's aim in partnering with the Romans is not simply to have lots of individuals. He wants the whole church in Rome to help him in his ministry to Spain. And you find the same in Philippians. So I did a sermon series in Philippians, which we turned into a little book. And my major critique of it all is that it was too individualistic. The purpose of Paul writing to the church in Philippi is that the church in Philippi join with him shoulder to shoulder in ministry, in gospel partnership. And there's a little verse, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 15, in which Paul says he is wanting to recruit the Corinthian church, not just for the collection, but to help him in ministry to the whole region of, and I think it's Achaia, I can't remember for the moment, but there you go. So, in my understanding, there is no such thing as a truly biblical independent church. Now, I don't mean by that all churches that call themselves independent evangelical cannot possibly be biblical, because 90% of churches that call themselves independent evangelical are connected to other churches, and so you should be. And the more you think about that, the more you discover that the gospel connects up churches in the New Testament. So when Paul is correcting the church in 1 Corinthians, he says, we have no other rule, nor do the churches. Anyway, so what I'm suggesting then is that the gospel recruits both gospel workers and whole churches for gospel partnership. And by keeping the gospel up front and center, it prevents us then from allowing our secondary evangelical shibboleths, the denominational distinctives and so forth, which may be important, but from allowing them to assume gospel significance. So isn't it interesting that in this great epistle of Romans, Paul devotes all of chapter 14 and 15 to the kind of things which end up making us denominationally distinct, Sabbaths and so forth, special days and all this sort of thing. So it's quite interesting that he actually then is wanting to make the gospel primary and keep us with those other things secondary. Now, gospel partnerships that reach the city. So I've been asked to speak on this because in England we have a number of... Where has that come from? They put that up because there's a little series on work that we did, which is rather ironic given that I say just teach the Bible, but it is from the Bible. On work. It's called Revolutionary Work, and many of the ideas that we've talked about regarding work are in that little book. Okay, you can finish it otherwise. Sorry about that. So gospel partnerships. What I've been asked to speak on this because in England, quite wonderfully over the last 15 years, a number of partnerships of churches have developed regionally where evangelical gospel churches are working together for the evangelization of the region. And what enables us to do that is that the gospel is front and center. And if I thought that being Anglican was more important than the gospel, well, I hope you would get shot at me pretty quickly. And if you think that being Baptist or Presbyterian or Free Church or whatever is more important than the gospel, then you need your head examined. And in Anglican circles, I say to Anglican ministers regularly, we are Anglican evangelicals. And the evangelical is the noun, and the Anglican is the adjective. And if you find that hard to work out, which I do, I remind myself that I have a red car. Okay, the red is the adjective, the car is the noun. So I'm an Anglican evangelical. And the mighty Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, in his excellent little booklet, What is an Evangelical?, says an evangelical is an evangelical first. That's what defines him. okay, so or her. So that's very important. They are gospel partnerships. And may I say that the clearer you are on the gospel in your partnership, the more you will be able to work together in things that really matter. So there are gospel coalitions, wonderfully, all over the world, but where there's not this clarity that the gospel matters more than my particular individual movement, you will find that those coalitions are actually just broad people who vaguely agree, who basically agree with each other on the gospel, but they're not actually prepared to work together. And we have deliberately said we don't want to be that sort of movement. We want to be the kind of movement made up of 10, 15 churches that are determined to work together, partnerships. Gospel partnerships. When you turn to Philippians, you might just do that for a moment. Philippians, because this has been very key in our partnerships. Philippians chapter 1. You know, partnership is such a big theme in Philippians because of your partnership in the gospel. You are all partners with me of grace. I want to partner in the sufferings of Christ. That's a fascinating verse, isn't it? Chapter 1, verse 27. Let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, not frightened at anything by your opponents. So that's what authentic partnership looks like. It looks like standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. Notice the faith of the gospel. That is the public objective truth of the gospel. Not my faith in the gospel, but the faith of the gospel. We are to stand firm in with one mind, striving, literally co-athleticizing for the faith of the gospel. And what Paul is wanting to see in the church at Philippi is a church that co-contends with him for the faith of the gospel, down in Achaia at Corinth and in Athens, and then out across the world. And so gospel partnerships, they're not passive things. I have to have skin on the table, I think, is the language they use. I don't know where it comes from or what it means. But anyway, I have to be actually in there relationally in terms of the time, commitment, financially, ready to give people to this. And we say that partnership involves, if it's genuinely biblical, people, this doesn't work, I'm afraid, for you, people, pounds, and prayer. Okay, I don't know, souls. No, I don't know how it would have, sterling. No, that's English as well. So people, pounds, and prayer. Okay, so actually genuine partnership, that's what it involves. And what we're looking for is in London, the London Gospel Partnership, we are looking for the advance of the gospel in London. And so now there are threats to partnership, and you can see one of them there in verse 28. Not frightened in anything by your opponents. And the other one there in chapter 2, verse 3. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. And I think the longer you've lived and worked together in a place like London, the more you know one another, and the more the verse 3 and 4 threat becomes real. I mean, I know the way every single other leader who's been in the London Partnership for any length of time thinks and works. And I know what they will be wanting to achieve the moment we come into a meeting together. And they know what I'm trying to achieve, and they know how I think and how I work, because we've been working together now for over 20 years. And so actually being part of an effective partnership does mean saying the gospel is first, have this mind among you which is yours in Christ, who though he was equal with God, made himself nothing. It really does require personal sacrifice if you're going to be involved in a genuine gospel partnership that reaches the city. And so we are wanting to have our eyes evangelistically on the city, and we keep that front and centre, and we say, if London is going to be evangelised, what's needed? More churches. And I think in the early days, we used to say something like, London has a population of 7 million. Even if just 10% of London were to find themselves in churches of 200, 10% of 7 million in churches of 200, we would need 3,500 churches. Now, it's quite a good exercise to do, even if it's slightly Arminian, that you say to yourself, Brisbane's got a population of 1.5 million. Even if just 10% of them were in churches of 200, how many churches would you expect to have? I don't know, I can't do the math. Somebody can. Okay. 750, there you are. I see the businessman has already worked it out. How many, sorry?
Engineers.
The engineer has done his work. So you've got to have 750 churches. How many conservative evangelical churches are there in Brisbane? Now then, that takes my eye off being little me. And please don't, I think one of the dangers of doing that is you begin to be very, very numbers driven. But it's just a useful exercise. Actually, 750 churches, we can't afford to be self-satisfied. I mean, St. Helens is full every Sunday. Praise God. St. Helens can become what I call a city-state like Jericho. We could exist, here we are, and we could happily. But there are 7 million people in London, and even if just 10% of them were to be in decent churches, we would need 3,500 churches. And I've got a list of the number of Bible-teaching churches that I'm aware of in London, and I usually pray for them on a Saturday morning, and there are about 30. You know, we're not even, and that's just 10%. So do you see, doing that gospel partnerships, that reach, keep the focus on the aim. But then if you're going to have churches and congregational members who are going to reach, you're going to need training. And so we've got to be behind the training mechanisms, whatever it may be, and you decide what the training, you've got a wonderful training college, but have you thought about how you're going to train non-ordained members? Sunday school teachers. Now, not every church leader on their own can set up Sunday school training. And so who's going to do for the network? And so our partnerships, gospel partnerships that reach, our partnerships tend to divide into three sectors. We have the training sector, we have the evangelism sector, and we have the church planting sector. And under training, we will have one person who is responsible for the broad raft of training. Not that they do it all, but that they're saying to themselves, are we training our youth leaders in the movement? Are we training our Sunday school leaders in the movement? There are plenty of churches where the church leader will find it very hard to train small group leaders on his own. So is there some way we could pool resources? They're doing a great job training small group leaders at such and such a church. Could we persuade them to allow us to come in on their small group leaders training weekend? Do you see, you're beginning to pool resources. Why? Because there are 635 churches needed, or 735, more than we've got, and therefore we've got to work together, because it's ridiculous to be kind of little me and my empire. So church partnerships that reach, that's just some of the training. Relationship is very important, so we try and make sure the church leaders go away at least once a year, for 2 days, and we spend 2 days critiquing and helping one another with our preaching, because that's what drives the movement. And so we want the best possible preaching we can have across the board. But that means we know each other. And so we have training, planting, evangelism. On the planting front, somebody did a wonderful exercise in London. They divided up London by postal district. That was quite an interesting thing. So they had a map of London and the postal districts. I don't know if that... Is that how you work here? Do you have postal districts? I don't know. You know, have a post person doing his posty stuff. and it's all worked around this district. What if you would have one church in every postal district? Now, there's a thought. And so they then began to fill in. How many have we got? Where are the gaps? This was the person who was responsible for planting. Well, where's it needed? I mean, it'd be very silly as a movement if you've got Presbyterians, Baptists. I don't know if you have anybody in the Church of Australia who's Christian in the Anglican Church of Australia. Are there any Christian ministers in? Are any of them here? There is one here, is there? Oh, good. Yeah, good, good, excellent. So that's splendid. Good. So there are one or two. But so you've got one or two. But I mean, wouldn't it be crazy to go and plant a Bible teaching church right next to Ann Street Presbyterian, Batty? So why not have a look at the map and say, well, look, we have a whole sector in the corridor going out down the M40 to Oxford. No churches. So we've now got a priority to start planting. And what we want to do is plant a church near the urban rim, close in, that itself then becomes a planting hub, planting other churches out. Now, that sounds great, and probably what the Lord will do is have a church planted somewhere near Oxford that then plants churches in. But at least we're thinking about it and praying about it, and you know, who knows how it'll work out. So, church partnership, gospel partnerships that reach. Keep your focus on reach, and then the other things will fall into place. The city. And I think I've spoken about this already, really, that reach the city. We need to make sure we are seeing the city the way God sees it, as lost and condemned and under judgment. We're wanting to see the gospel is the power of God for salvation. And we're wanting to do the connected work between the suburban churches and the metropolitan hub, so that we're not thinking parochially. And one of the kind of things we do is we get suburban pastors to come in to our lunchtime service so that they meet with their working men and women. We arrange lunch for that particular little church group. And that enables them to begin to say, oh, I haven't really thought about all these people in the church. And then we encourage the suburban pastors, rather than employing yet another children's worker, to employ a men's worker or a worker's worker in the church, so that they come in. Or indeed, here is a real shock, that the suburban pastor himself comes into the city, which after all, so probably 25% of his church congregation do every day of their working life. Get on the train with them at 6 o'clock in the morning. Come in. Why not? Actually talk to one of them. Come and visit them in their office. Take them out for coffee. And if you do that once a week for I don't know, 9 months of the year, just think how that would revolutionize the informal missionary who you're sending in from the suburbs. So I'm happy to take questions on that. If I don't know, David, you wanted me to talk about this, didn't you? Do you want to?
I think what you said is really very, very helpful.
When we first began to talk about this, so I asked Peter Jensen to come across to England. He went to a whole load of different regions. We wanted to decentralize. We chose churches that were hubs, and he visited 6 centres around England. And immediately, a guy up in the northwest said, this cannot be only Anglican. And so immediately there and then, they arranged to meet with all the other denominational leaders in the northwest who were on the same page doctrinally and in terms of church culture. And they then set up a gospel partnership. And Justin, such a clear thinker, immediately, this is our goal, to reach the northwest. We must have one person responsible for the training, and they can form their own little training team, but there must be one person responsible for the planting, one person responsible for the outreach, and this group of 4, Justin and 3, meet however often they meet, however much you need to, but then those 3 go off and plan the training for the whole youth, children. Then Justin actually was asked to lead a small college, and they, you know, and it all spiraled off from there. But good.
The 10% thing is helpful not only in terms of showing us that we can't do this on our own. But it's also a call to prayer.
It is.
And it's not turning your plan into the reality.
It is. It is. Shall we do that now? I mean, a few people might lead us in prayer for Brisbane. It would be lovely. Why don't... And then, Glenn, you can round us off. But it would be good if you know, a few people from the floor led us in prayer, and then Glenn will round us off.